This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Many people are looking forward to life getting back to the way it was before the pandemic, seeing loved ones, going out with friends, interacting with other people outside of their bubble. And with Hoosiers continuing to get vaccinated, the good old days could be around the corner, but are we getting ahead of ourselves? Are we really seeing enough people vaccinated? And what about all those variants? With us today to talk more about the return to normal is Shandy Durth, lecturer and director of undergraduate epidemiology education at IUPUI. Welcome back, Shandy.
Thank you for having me, Miriam.
Where is Indiana in numbers of vaccinations across the state if we really want to get to the bottom of this?
So at this point, we've got about 2.4 million fully vaccinated. We're in a state with a little more than 6 million people. We're starting to fall behind some other states. If you look at the map across the U.S., Indiana needs to pick up the pace to stay on par with the other states around us.
Are there certain parts of the state that are more heavily vaccinated?
We're definitely seeing slower vaccinations at this point among the more rural areas. We're seeing greater vaccine uptake in the more urban areas at this point.
And what is the cause for that? Is there any sort of evidence pointing to why that is?
I think part of it is just possibly access, for one, and just the expectations from some of the larger employers to get vaccinated, more incentives, that sort of thing. But often we see access as an issue in the more rural areas for other vaccines as well, not just COVID.
Okay, so it's just an overall trend. Is there a possibility that our pre-pandemic lifestyle will be within reach in the near future? Are we seeing things trending in that direction, or is it still pretty far off?
I think we're headed towards that direction. Unfortunately, I think we're kind of coasting on the coattails of others around us right now. So we see COVID going down across the U.S., which is great. But as you've heard, other states are getting closer to that 70%, and we're just not there yet. We're only about 42% in Indiana. So even though it's looking encouraging for all of us, we need to keep vaccinating as we go forward. Summer's kind of our chance to buy some time and get more people vaccinated before fall comes back and we're indoors more, we're around each other more, and there's a greater chance of transmission.
Mm-hmm. And what about in terms of vaccine hesitancy? Is that still playing a role in not getting up to that higher number of folks vaccinated? Is that pushing people back?
It is. We still see some of that among younger people who think, well, I don't need the vaccine because if I got COVID, it wouldn't be that big of a deal for me. We've seen a lot of misinformation out there on social media. Unfortunately, around fertility, none of that is true. That is really not a concern. But unfortunately, people are paying more attention to social media than public health and science right now. And then we've always had some vaccine hesitancy among Blacks and African Americans, which is understandable because of the history of the U.S. and some of the medical experiments in the past. But we're really working to overcome some of that in those communities.
And so what are some of those ways to sort of combat hesitancy, whether it's around communities of color or just people who think, yeah, I'm young and I'm not going to get sick?
So we take a variety of approaches. I think a lot of times it really depends on the messenger. We've got to make sure the messenger represents the population that they're serving, that they're talking to. And so people aren't going to listen to me, an academic person necessarily, but they might listen to a trusted faith, someone of from their church or synagogue. They might listen to a trusted family member, someone like that who's had the vaccine. They realize they've had the vaccine, they haven't had any severe effects, and they can go forward with the vaccine. And some of these younger crowds, what we're seeing in some of the other states, sometimes incentives can kind of help push people over that. So it's not that they're necessarily against the vaccine, they're just not taking the time to go get the vaccine. And that's where incentives can play a piece of this.
Right, right. Well, if you're listening and you have any questions or comments, you can reach out to us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. And we do have a listener voicemail from Ellen who has a question about how careful to be if you're fully vaccinated. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Ellen. I am living in Indianapolis, and I have this question relating to COVID and the show you're doing about opening up. I have 8 siblings. One of them is not vaccinated, and my husband and I are, and my husband wants to host our unvaccinated relative for the Indy 500 weekend. He would be spending the night for a couple of nights. I'm a little nervous about it. My husband, however, thinks we're very protected because we're fully vaccinated. So my question is, do you think it's wise? Is it wise to do that, or are we ahead of ourselves? Thank you very much.
All right, Shandy.
So that's a great question. I know many families are battling that one right now. So for the vaccinated people in the household, I would say they're probably safe. These are really good vaccines, some of the best we've ever had, probably. And people who are vaccinated, if you get COVID, their symptoms still are not as strong, and we're definitely not seeing the hospitalizations or the deaths with people with COVID. I myself, I'm vaccinated. I have been for a while because of the work I do. And so I'm not that worried about it myself. But think about who else might be in your household. So if you're bringing in an unvaccinated person into your household, that person could potentially transmit COVID to another unvaccinated person in your household. So if you've got kids under 12 in your house who have not been vaccinated yet, I would advise against it, honestly, because you're going to be in an enclosed area with that person. Offer to help them find a hotel in town for the weekend. Otherwise, bringing vaccinated people together, completely fine. I'm not any more worried about measles, mumps, or rubella because I'm fully vaccinated. And fortunately, I'm not worried about COVID-19 for myself right now because I'm vaccinated. But again, you've got to think about those unvaccinated people around each other.
Yeah, it is such a tricky situation to be in. I think it's just constantly battling, like, what are the risk levels and who's at risk, and a lot to think about, for sure.
Yes.
I want to talk a little bit about the emergency use authorization, or EUA, specifically when it comes to the COVID-19 vaccine. I know when I went to get my shot, I saw that pop up, and I was like, oh, what am I doing? Is that contributing to some vaccine hesitancy, do you think?
I think it is. I know we've seen some hesitancy among some of the hospitals and employers in making the vaccine mandated, but I just want to point out that typically the biologic license application, which is kind of what we call the full approval process the FDA goes through, that usually takes 6 months to review to get to that step, and we were in a pandemic. Mm-hmm. And so basically that's why we were able to go forward with that EUA. But think about it. We have vaccinated way more people in the last few months under this EUA than we would have normally if we got just a regular new vaccine for some other disease under the old way of following the biologic license application. And so we're going to have so many more data points going forward. It's really not a concern at this point, as far as I'm concerned. I think the data has proven that the vaccines are safe, they're effective, and this will probably go through the approval process faster than what we normally see with other vaccines in the past.
Mm-hmm. So is it safe to say that eventually we won't have to see that kind of writing when we go to get vaccines, that this is under EUA?
Correct. Yes. So Pfizer applied to start that process on May 7th. Moderna has said they plan to start sometime in May. We're in the last week of May, so we expect to hear something this week where Moderna has come out as well and started the FDA process for that final approval.
And also this morning, Reuters was reporting that Pfizer is testing combining the COVID-19 vaccine booster with the pneumococcal vaccine. Will that create more vaccination compliance if folks can get something that's just all in one?
Definitely. Anytime you can combine vaccines, you know, it just helps to have that kind of one-and-done approach, especially as we look at vaccines that you have to have on a regular basis, influenza, that sort of thing. It will definitely be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about herd immunity. That's another thing that we keep hearing being touted as something that we need to reach in order for life to go back to normal. Is that still the case? Because then I've heard some instances where Dr. Fauci would say, we're never going to get there. We just got to do what we got to do.
I can see both approaches. So in general, we typically say you need to reach between 70-80% vaccination rates to reach that herd immunity. I've got to say, for like flu vaccinations around the U.S., a lot of at-risk adults each year, we only hit about 50% on that. I'm thinking we're probably going to get around that 50% average for a lot of states here in the U.S. Unfortunately, we're not going to hit that 70%. But I think that means COVID will be a regular piece of our lives, and we're going to have to deal with that probably the way we do with flu on an annual basis as well.
Right. Well, later in the show, we're going to talk about businesses and companies wanting to open back up to full capacity, or at least something close to that. But I do want to ask your thoughts about businesses that plan to fully reopen by July. For example, earlier this month, Eli Lilly announced the company will be welcoming back around 25% of its employees to their headquarters beginning in June. And then, according to the Indianapolis Star, the company expecting that the risk of infections will be low enough to drop the mask and vaccination requirements for office workers by July, when it plans to allow all office workers back. Well, I should say that Eli Lilly plans to require vaccinations for employees coming back in person. Is that going to be the future of going back to work? Vaccine mandates and stuff.
I think that will be a big piece of it. Employers are allowed to ask your vaccine status. For some reason, a lot of people think that employers can't because of HIPAA. That's not true. HIPAA does not apply to your employer in that regard. And they can require the vaccines. And I think we've all seen that vaccines are what we need to go forward, especially if you're in an enclosed office space. They have a duty under OSHA to protect their employees, and that could be that they require everyone to get vaccinated. So I think it's a great way to move forward and get us back to that normal.
And what's the best way? I mean, are they an example of how to go about this in sort of stages, you know, 25% and then the whole workforce back?
Yes, I think that's great. That way you're not just flipping a switch. You're looking at that 25%, making sure you're not seeing any new cases, any transmission, and then they will gradually add to that. You know, and it's Lilly. They're a scientific organization, so they're going to understand the need for vaccinations, the need to keep an eye on that going forward. So I think it's an approach a lot of other businesses should mimic over the summer and fall.
And as we get ready to wrap up here, I'm curious, before there was a lot of fear about the virus spreading and who has it and who doesn't. And now it seems like if you're vaccinated, maybe there's more concern among the unvaccinated about spreading and catching it. Is that still happening?
Yes, I would definitely say the unvaccinated are where our greatest concerns are, because, again, we've had so many people vaccinated long enough now that we're able to confirm that most of the vaccinated people are not having those severe cases. They're not ending up in the hospitals. They're not putting a surge on the healthcare workforce. And we're not seeing mortality cases in that group as well. It's really up to the unvaccinated at this point to protect themselves and get that vaccine.
And any sort of numbers we should be looking at to be concerned, you know, any sort of percentage of cases going up that would be cause for concern?
I mean, right now our numbers are pretty low. If we were to hit, you know, a 10%, 15% positivity rate, that would be very alarming again. We don't expect that to happen over the summer. We do expect that to happen among some of the schools in the fall when schools return, just because we're not going to have vaccines yet for kids under 12. So we're still keeping a close look on schools, college settings, places like that where vaccines are not yet required.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Shandy Dirth, Director of Undergraduate Epidemiology Education at IUPUI. Coming up, tourism and business in Indiana. Where are they heading now with more things slowly opening up? And how are folks in these industries ensuring the safety of those coming back to work and those who are coming out to enjoy the various activities offered? I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Before the break, we were talking about whether it's feasible to see an increase in activities as more people get vaccinated and if it's the right time for businesses to start making big plans to get their doors open to full capacity. With us now to talk about how businesses and tourism and the outlook for Hoosiers is coming up ahead this next couple of months. We have Phil Powell, Associate Dean of Academic Programs, Kelly School of Business at Indiana University, and Amy Vaughn, Clinical Assistant Professor at the Department of Tourism, Event Management, and Sport Management at IUPUI. Welcome, both of you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Miriam.
Thank you, Miriam.
If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Amy, how much are businesses and other companies itching to get back up and running?
Miriam, I think businesses are so ready to be back up and running. And, you know, honestly, Indianapolis is in so much of a better position than most other cities. I mean, things are still tough, but we're doing so much better than other cities. You know, the fact that we were able to host March Madness successfully, and now to have 130,000 fans coming in for the race, we're so far ahead of other cities.
Are you seeing any sectors that are particularly able to get back on their feet right now?
Well, it's definitely tough. I mean, the restaurant and hotel industries are struggling, and it's a real issue with workforce. And so, you know, we really implore customers to be patient when you go out to a restaurant, because the restaurants are struggling to find help. Now, the flip side of that is it's a great time to start a career in the hospitality business because there are so many jobs available. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
Well, I definitely want to talk more about sort of the business side of things, hiring and all of that in the next segment. But I do want to get your opinion. Do you think Indiana is on track so far to get back to normal, or does it seem like it's a really long road ahead?
I think that's a great question. Honestly, I don't know that things will go back to normal, really. I think things will be different. So I think an expectation that we'll be exactly back to normal is probably not true. But I think we can be close to normal. And I mean, I think there may be positive changes that come out of this too. You know, some of the things that we were used to in hotels of having, you know, service every day to change out your linens and things, you know, they've gone away. And, you know, honestly, I don't think it's made a big difference. So mm-hmm. I don't know that things will go back to normal, but I think that we are getting closer to a semblance of normal.
Right. Well, Phil, earlier in the show, we touched on the fact that Eli Lilly is planning to bring employees back into their headquarters. What impact does an announcement like that have, not only for Lilly, but for other Indiana businesses and companies?
Well, first of all, it has a big impact for downtown. Over 150,000 Hoosiers commute downtown in Indianapolis. And as if you've been downtown, even now, it's deserted. And this is going to be a huge boom for the core of our city and the businesses that serve folks. If you're a big company like Eli Lilly, it allows you to bring the family back home. Yes, we've been productive while folks have been at home. A lot of businesses have thrived. They've been able to sell their services and get things done. But it's very hard in the long run to sustain the corporate culture that makes you competitive and differentiates you in the marketplace. And being able to bring folks back to the office means that you don't have to be guessing about how to do business virtually. You can get back to the way that you know how to do business, and you can solidify that culture that helped sustain you through COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Are you seeing any businesses that are, since this Lilly announcement, deciding to jump ahead and reopen that maybe were hesitant in the beginning?
I think you're seeing phased in openings. It's sort of depends upon how the business owners feel. But overall, you know, businesses are starting to step by step come back into the economy and return to face-to-face business, which is great for the Hoosier economy.
Mm-hmm. And what about in terms of, you know, there's so much debate on businesses reopening and what the guidelines are going to be and whether they should be mandating vaccines. Have you heard of any of this kind of discussion going on?
Well, you know, it depends on who your customers are. And businesses serve their customers. And obviously, if you're a business, first and foremost, you're going to comply with local health ordinances. But as health authorities and as municipalities pull back on their regulations, it's really going to be a choice. And I think if you're a smart business, you're going to balance protecting your employees with yielding to the customers. Your customers are going to want to return to normal. And I know that when you make the decision to sort of pull down that sign from the door that says mask required, when you pull that down, that's going to help your customers feel more safe, especially if they're loyal customers and they trust the decisions that you make. So to Amy's point earlier, our businesses and the relationship, that they're also signals to their customers about how safe the environment is.
Mm-hmm. Well, as businesses get ready to safely reopen, we're also seeing the return of large events and conventions like Gen Con, Indy 500, and most recently, the NCAA tournament. We spoke to Nate Swick, the communications manager for Visit Indy, about hosting the tournament in Indianapolis and what it means to host a larger event like this for the state. Let's take a listen.
So last March, when the convention center closed, major thanks to the Indiana Convention Center and the Capital Improvement Board for pouring $7 million in health and safety measures into the convention center to upgrade the health and safety of the building. And so once that was complete, we started welcoming groups back in July. And since July of last year, the city has hosted more than 75 events, safely and successfully welcoming nearly 400,000 visitors to Indianapolis. And each of these events has really served as a proof of concept that we are able to safely and successfully welcome visitors to the city. The big one is obviously the NCAA tournament, which we held here in March and into April earlier this year. And planning for this event really began, I mean, these events are planned years in advance. So we knew we were going to have the Final Four. And then when the 2020 Final Four and tournament was canceled, we started to think through, okay, well, how can we do the 2021 event safely and successfully if we are called upon to still host the Final Four? And then as we got into the summer, we were coming up with all these contingency plans for if we have partial capacity, if we have no capacity of fans, if we have full capacity, what is this event going to look like and how can we do it safely? So we started planning for that, I mean, right when we knew that there was a possibility. So to about a year in advance then from last March, these conversations were being had. But that was still when we thought we were only hosting the Final Four. And then come late 2020, the NCAA comes to us with this opportunity to potentially host the entire tournament. And then it was all hands on deck to figure out how can we do this and how can we do it safely and successfully, because never before has any city hosted the entire NCAA tournament in one city, let alone during a pandemic. And then you think about why the NCAA chose Indianapolis, and there's a long roster of reasons why Indy was chosen and selected to be the host city for this, that included everything from the fact the NCAA is headquartered here to the fact we were planning, or we already were set to host the Final Four, but then also the $7 million in enhancements and health and safety measures that were put into the convention center to kind of make sure this was a safe place to host events. And then each of those events that we hosted, I mentioned since last July, we've hosted 75 plus events safely and successfully here in the city. And so each of those served as a proof of concept. And so if they're able to host an event successfully, maybe we can. And it kind of starts a domino effect.
All right. So we heard what Nate had to say about hosting the NCAA here in Indianapolis. Amy, what are your thoughts on that? It sounds like there was a lot of planning that had to be done, and it seemed like it was pretty successful.
Yes, Miriam, I would really agree with that wholeheartedly, that I think the leadership that Indianapolis showed during this time will bring dividends in years to come. You know, the fact that Visit Indy was able to bring prospective clients in during March Madness so that prospective clients could see how Indianapolis was able to partner with the city and with the health department to make a safe environment for groups. I think that Indianapolis will be recognized for that leadership and innovation, and we'll see the benefits of that with future groups, you know, coming as a result.
And Phil, what about you? What are your thoughts on the NCAA tournament being hosted here? Was that an example for the rest of the country in pulling off a very big event safely?
Miriam, it gave us a head start on advertising that we're open in a limited capacity. So, you know, if you're a convention or an event that is in another, considering where to hold your conference in the next few years, you might now be considered Indianapolis when you didn't before. It speaks again to our competitiveness as a city to come together and really deliver where other cities can't. So I think it definitely, you know, put us on the radar screen of folks that would not have otherwise considered us for a conference or an event.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you think, I mean, there was one story of a fan who had COVID and ended up passing away. Do you think that hindered any efforts in promoting Indiana as a safe place to do business, or was it just a blown out of proportion? It was just one incident out of thousands of people.
Again, very tragic that we lost one of our visitors. Don't want to minimize that. However, I think most folks would not have expected us to bat 1,000 on impact. And when you have thousands and thousands of thousands of people coming to such a large national event, I think that public expectations had some capacity for forgiveness in terms of whatever city was hosting it. But still, losing one life is one life too many.
Right, absolutely. And Amy, I'm curious, you know, having this event all in one place, being able to pull it off, it was never done before. Does that seem like it's going to be the future of events just all taking place in one location versus traveling to many different locations?
Uh, I think that's a great question. That's possible. I think that there is so much pent up demand for people to travel and go places again that intuitively, I think that people will still want to go to a variety of places. I mean, I think we see that now with leisure traveler. The leisure travelers, you know, this pent up demand that everyone has to get out and go places again, like it's not pent up anymore. It's happening. These leisure trips are being taken, you know, right now. People can't get enough of them. So I suspect that with meetings, it may be the same way, where people will want to go back to having a variety of different options. But I think it's still a big advantage to Indianapolis, knowing that for those clients who want that, we can do it all here.
Mm-hmm. And oh yeah, go ahead. Was someone about to say something? Okay. Well, Phil, I do want to ask you: is now the time for businesses to start reopening as we see case numbers sort of declining, vaccines being taken, or should people just wait?
It's time to get back to business. Again, I think the only thing that would hold a business back is if you're serving a clientele that still has valid reason to be concerned. Could be, you know, especially if you have, as Amy said earlier, as we heard earlier about schools and universities, daycare centers, children are not vaccinated yet. Now, of course, they're not at high risk for really bad cases of the disease if they do get sick, but it all depends on your customers. If you're serving adults, who can get the vaccine, and you have a critical mass that you think have gotten that vaccine, or that don't are willing to take the risk of not the vaccine, it's not an issue for them. Go back to business. It's time to go back to business if your clientele can get the vaccine. I think that, again, the only reason to slow things down would be you're serving a very special segment of the population that's, first of all, not able to get the vaccine, and second, is very concerned about the fact that they can't.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say on the flip side of, I think earlier we talked about how, you know, if clients feel they're loyal to a business and they trust them and everything, and the business takes down the mask requirements to go in. What about clients who maybe they want to see that up there for a little bit longer? Is that going to hinder these businesses at all?
Again, it's a business decision that you have to make.
Right.
Just like individuals are having to make decisions about vaccines and their exposure to risk, businesses have to do the same. There's this huge gray area about what you should do. And as the health regulations retreat, they're basically shifting the decision about what to do back to the businesses and back to customers. Mm-hmm. And so this is where business owners really need to know their customers, but also they really need to know how their employees feel. I mean, you might have customers that are very, very laissez-faire about the issue and don't really care, but you might have a set of employees that are very important to the mission that might want you to slow down. So again, it's a business decision. You're balancing what your customers want, different types of customers, and what your employees want, and what, you know, again, making sure you're also compliant with local regulations.
Mm-hmm. Is it fair to say that now the ball is in the court of businesses, whereas before they were they had their hands tied trying to follow guidelines?
Absolutely. The ball's back in the hand of adults about whether they want to get the vaccine. And by not getting the vaccine, they're making the choice to incur the risk. That's what you do in business. You make choices about what risks to entail. So the ball's back in the business court, and you just have to be a good manager and a good executive to balance everything at play to make sure that your business is financially sustainable, which means that you're also serving your customers and your employees well.
Right. And Amy, I'm curious to know, how are businesses doing in, for example, the Indiana suburbs compared to those in the city?
You know, Miriam, I was just thinking about that. Actually, the suburbs are doing very well. They're back to 2019 levels. And I noticed that most often in the restaurants, the employees are still wearing masks, where there is, I think, more leeway with guests. But you definitely see in the suburbs that the restaurants are doing extremely well. But then I also think it speaks to the need for downtown workers to return to downtown, because we still see the need for people to be back downtown to help those downtown restaurants. But the suburbs are thriving in the restaurant business.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, with more people working from home and being closer to the businesses near where they are working from home, we'll see those businesses doing better. So are you anticipating that the city will thrive once people start going back to work? I mean, I'm just wondering if people decide to work from home more days than they did in the past, if that's going to have an impact.
I think that's a great question. I just have lived in Indianapolis for a long time, and I'll always bet on Indianapolis. Honestly, I think the people here really believe in the you know, vigor of the city, and you know, to have a thriving downtown is important to the suburbs. It's important to the entire state. So I do think there'll be some differences. I think people who used to work 5 days a week downtown may only go downtown 3 days a week. So I hope that the balance works out. But I think that, you know, for many people, you know, that they'll look forward to getting back downtown, back to the office, and not being isolated at home anymore. So I think that we will see downtown businesses pick up as well.
Well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking about businesses in Indiana opening up again and the kinds of challenges they'll continue to face amidst the COVID-19 pandemic. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Indiana businesses getting back on their feet and some of the challenges that come with reopening during a pandemic. Before the break, we discussed the impact of the pandemic on businesses in the city versus the suburbs and how places that were closer to where people were living and working from home did a lot better. With us again are Phil Powell, Associate Dean of Academic Programs, Kelly School of Business at Indiana University, and Amy Vaughn, Clinical Assistant Professor at the Department of Tourism, Event Management, and Sport Management at IUPUI. Phil, I want to ask your thoughts on what we just left off on, whether the shift of where people were living and working had an impact on businesses. And if people go back to work, will that hit those local businesses in the suburbs hard once they lose that clientele to the city? It's back and forth, it seems like.
Well, I think that Amy hit the nail on the head. I think we're definitely going to see a return to work. You know, in the early days of the pandemic, there was talk of this revolution that we'd never go back to work. And while that may be true, especially in the tech sector, you know, especially in the Midwest, we're going to see some return because, again, we are human animals. We like to congregate socially. We like life in three dimensions, not two. Mm-hmm. So what you're going to see this permanent shift. Now, the local businesses, as Amy pointed out, have enjoyed a spike, perhaps, especially maybe during the lunch hour, that is going to go down. But I think that business for the suburbs will settle at a higher level than before the pandemic. But that also means that businesses downtown are not going to enjoy the same level of commercial activity that they did before. And I think this is going to be reflected in real estate prices. We're seeing a boom in housing that's here to stay, I think. That's actually going to bid up the price for perhaps some commercial areas in the suburbs. But downtown, we're going to see probably a retrenchment in commercial real estate prices, along with a harder time perhaps renting the apartments that we've seen go up in the Circle City the last 15 years. So, but it's going to reflect this sort of hybrid approach where folks come downtown not 5 days a week, but probably three or four in some places. But I think three is going to be the average mm-hmm. for a worker that was working every day before the pandemic.
So maybe it'll be distributed a little bit more evenly, you know, between the two. Maybe everybody gets a fair shot.
I think so. But if you're downtown, you definitely lose because it's not going to return to what it was before.
And Amy, I see you nodding your head there. What are you in agreement with?
Well, this is anecdotal, but I've been sitting in my dining room in Fisher's for the last year. And so I personally, as much as maybe I didn't always enjoy driving down I-69 5 days a week in the past, I am looking forward to driving down at least 3 days in the future. So I feel like, as Philip said, you know, most of us, isolation is not good for humans, right? We want connection. We want to be around other people. Students want to be back in the classroom. They want to be back on campus. And so I think most people are going to be eager to return.
Yeah, I mean, I can agree to that. I think I've been missing eating in a restaurant. And it's funny because before it was just like taken for granted. You just eat in a restaurant. Right now, I'm like, I'm sick of washing my own dishes. Oh, man. Well, there are so many other factors that influence business and consumer behavior. And with it, there are issues that can crop up as well, including things like the supply chain. Phil, back in March, we did a show on supply chains, particularly with products like toilet paper or the stoppers that go on vaccine bottles. And what can you tell us about supply chains in the context of businesses and companies reopening in Indiana? What is the shortage that they're facing?
Well, parts of the global supply chain are still broken. They just have not recovered. We have to remember that while we're opening up, the rest of the world is still in lockdown in many ways, even Europe. So if you had a global supply chain, which has been encouraged the last 25 years, if you're building a business to cut your costs, you're still feeling the hurt. Also, now, there's also another thing that's impacting supply chains, and that is this pent-up demand that Amy was talking about. Mm-hmm. A lot of money was set aside in savings during the pandemic. In the second quarter of last year, our household savings rate spiked from about 5% to 33%. So there's a lot of cash that's sitting in bank accounts, or unfortunately, Bitcoin accounts or day trading accounts. People are ready to spend that money. And so there's going to be this rush to purchase. We're already seeing it in the housing industry. There's this rush to purchase things. And you know, businesses had to shut down their supply chains just to survive, to minimize their cost, to minimize their cash outflow. And you can't just overnight turn those supply chains back on. And some vendors may have disappeared. They may have gone bankrupt. Although our level of bankruptcy, we did avert catastrophe in terms of business failures and bankruptcies during 2020. Mm-hmm. So there's two things hampering the supply chains. There's the global situation, which is also political too. Our relationship with China is much more adverse than it was just 3 years ago. But really what's impacting businesses is this huge spike in demand, and they just can't keep up with it. And we're just going to have to be patient and maybe delay purchases that we would have otherwise made because all of a sudden the price is unaffordable.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like, I mean, if people have a lot of cash saved up and they're ready to spend, they've been cooped up. Have we seen anything like this in our history?
Well, I mean, the last time we saw this was 1920, after the Spanish flu pandemic. And, you know, this recession that we had was not a natural recession. It was driven by a public health crisis. So we very rarely see the forces at play that we see right now. And what we saw in the 1920s was this huge shopping spree, especially through about 1925, 1926. And the economists are predicting a similar run here. We're predicting a pretty good party. So right. To celebrate, again, life in three dimensions. So, but again, there's the capacity of the economy to deliver can only rebuild itself so fast. People want to spend money more quickly. They want to return to life more quickly than businesses can deliver. And we're just mm-hmm. going to have to be patient on that, whether it's waiters in restaurants or the bricks for your new patio.
Well, when we talk about labor shortages, Amy, what is it like for businesses in Indiana? What are you seeing?
So in terms of restaurants, you know, it's across the board that, you know, there's a shortage of truck drivers to deliver the food. There's a shortage of workers to pick the produce. So it is across the board. It's not just the servers in the restaurant. And, you know, honestly, immigration is a part of this big puzzle that because of fewer immigrants coming or, you know, people that left this country, there are fewer people for some of those jobs. And it wouldn't be limited to just restaurant industry as well. I'm sure it's in the construction industry and other industries. So there's definitely, it's a multifaceted issue that we have right now in terms of workforce that I think we all see it when we go into a restaurant and we know that there's one server for a whole section, but it's even beyond just that one server situation.
And what is it? I mean, maybe we talked about this earlier, but I'm just trying to wrap my head around why we don't have enough labor force. Is it because people have more cash on hand and don't feel like they need to go back into work for a while, avoiding COVID?
You know, I think that something we haven't talked about yet, but it's an important piece of this, is working women and how hard this pandemic has been on working women. That, you know, women were trying to work from home. They, in many cases, they had children who were doing virtual learning from home. So they were trying to work. They were trying to help their, you know, children with school. And so I think we had a lot of women who have opted out of the workforce. And, you know, I think that they have not reentered in many cases. But the situation that working women have been in, I think, is part of this issue.
Mm-hmm. So it highlights just how important women are to the workforce. Maybe this will get folks to pay attention. And Phil, I want to ask you, do you think labor shortages will continue to be an issue in the future for employers in Indiana, or as things slowly start to open up from schools to other programs, it'll get back to normal?
I think the level of shortage that we're seeing right now is very acute, and it will get better for a couple of reasons. As workers get more, or as folks on the sidelines who are not working get more confident that the workplace is healthy and it's a safe place to go back to, that's holding people back. Number two, the unemployment benefits that folks are receiving, they helped us during a tough time, but it does make it hard to go back to a job when you're making more money with the extra benefits. And again, I'm not criticizing that policy, but that is going to retreat and people are going to have a stronger incentive to go back into the workforce. To Amy's point, you know, daycare is tough to find. And if you find it, it's very expensive. And that's holding back. That disproportionately impacts women professionals. And that's also going to, daycares will start to open up again and become more available. However, we need to realize that we had a pretty bad shortage of skilled labor before the pandemic in Indiana. We're going to return to that. State unemployment in Indiana is already below 4%. That's back to pre-pandemic levels. And we're about 2 points lower than the rest of the country. So, yes, it will get a little bit better, but not much better. If you're an employer, the way to overcome a labor shortage is to pay more, pay workers what they're worth even more, and to make it a great place to work. And so I really think the burden and the responsibility is upon employers to compete for the workers and to pay better wages and to have a better work culture and value their employees even more.
Mm-hmm. And Phil, to speak on that point, that Governor Holcomb recently announced the state will end federally funded pandemic unemployment benefits June 19th, with Indiana joining a number of states taking the step. Is that a sign that the state is on track with jobs? Is this an incentive to get people to get back to work? I mean, maybe it's too soon to see the results.
Absolutely. I mean, again, I think the state and the federal government was very responsive in making sure folks could pay their rents and got that extra cash that they needed. However, we are returning to a post or an economy with no public health crisis. And so it makes sense to pull back on that. We can't afford it as a state. We can't afford it as a federal government. And again, the numbers speak for themselves. We're at 4% unemployment in the state of Indiana. So we're almost back to where we were before COVID, at least with that statistic. So it is wise. There is prudence in pulling back on some of the benefits that were out there.
Well, if you have any questions or comments for the show, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Amy, I want to talk a little bit more about the tourism sector. Are there any challenges facing that industry right now, or with summer around the corner and people getting back to outdoor things, is it going to see a boom this year?
You know, what we've seen, and I was talking to some folks at the Indiana State Museum last week, is that, for example, with the Indiana State Museum, they have the museum downtown where they have properties out across the state that are mainly outdoor. And as you might imagine, the outdoor sites have done very well during this past year, with more of a challenge of getting people to come inside the actual museum. So I think that, you know, all indoor attractions are in the same boat right now of determining, you know, what visitors are comfortable with. And, you know, they're doing all the right things about looking at capacity, number of people. But I think intuitively right now, people are still somewhat more comfortable with outdoor locations. So you'll see places like the zoo and Conner Prairie. Those have been faring a bit better since they have the outdoor space. And I think with summer and summer camps, you'll see those outdoor locations just benefit more. But with the indoor museums and attractions, they just have a little bit of a greater challenge into communicating with people what they're doing to keep things safe, which, of course, they are doing.
Right. And right. And Phil, what are some of the challenges ahead for businesses and employers? I know we discussed some of them, but is there anything sort of like outstanding right now that they're going to have to get done right in order to have a successful reopening?
Well, I think it goes back to workers, Miriam. I mean, employers are going to have to pay more money. And this can be, you know, we talk about a labor shortage, but in economics, we talk about how the way you overcome a labor shortage is by paying labor more. And so I think that Hoosier companies, if there's one learning and you come into a post-COVID economy, really evaluate your work culture, really evaluate your workplace. It's going to be tougher to recruit skilled talent with the way that you did things before COVID. People have different preferences. They're going to want to work at home more. You can't be stodgy and too traditional. And if you are, you're going to lose out and you're not going to be able to open your business. There's a theme park in South Carolina, Carowinds, where I've spent some of my younger years. And it couldn't open last week. This is like a Six Flags. It couldn't open last week because they didn't have enough workers. And so the bargaining leverage is with the workers, and it's going to be in a post-COVID environment. So that'd be my advice to businesses, is to really evaluate how you're placed to keep employees and pay them what they're worth.
And Amy, sort of a similar question from a different angle. What do you think the tourism industry needs to do to woo back visitors?
Well, I think a lot of the things that Philip just mentioned apply here as well. And I think even about restaurants right now, that I've noticed a trend where many restaurants are closing on Mondays now, and it's because they do not have the staff to be open 7 days a week. So in order to take care of their employees and not work them, you know, to exhaustion, they're closing on Mondays. So I think it's the same situation where these tourism attractions and restaurants are really going to have to take good care of their people because, you know, these employees have other options now. In this economy, there's plenty of other jobs out there for them to make a change.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're getting ready to wrap up here. I want to ask each of you one thing you're really looking forward to getting back to do once things are back to normal. Phil?
I'm looking forward to having people in my office. Maybe not 5 days a week, but I want that human connection. Again, I want to see my colleagues and get back to life as normal in some ways at work.
Right. Well, Amy, what about you?
Well, I can think of many things, but two specifically, as Phil mentioned, I want to be back in the classroom. I want to be face-to-face with students, to make that connection with students. I think students learn better in a classroom, and I think instructors prefer to be in the classroom. And I also would like to go to a concert. And this morning, I bought tickets to go see Symphony on the Prairie this summer to the Beatles concert, and it felt so good to be doing something that felt normal. So I am very much looking forward to that.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us this afternoon. Phil Powell, Associate Dean of Academic Programs, Kelly School of Business at Indiana University, and Amy Vaughn, Clinical Assistant Professor at the Department of Tourism, Event Management, and Sport Management at IUPUI. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.